Hey folks, it's the Shea Anything podcast. Doug Williams alongside Andy Martino. We got asked on Twitter, maybe last night or the night before, to Shea something, and here we are. Shea
Someone
anything.
Did say that. I got a couple questions. Where are you? Which is nice that people were missing it.
Yep.
Our answer was
you were really busy there for a couple weeks.
Well, that's true, but that's all right. That's the job. But we just didn't want to do this until we'd done, like, breaking down the candidates
right.
in the final
what
round.
What was there to do until they actually
until they found
somebody.
One.
Well, and, guess what? They have.
They have.
We'll get into Brody Van Wagenen and Andy's reporting today, Thursday, about who he may surround himself with in the Mets front office. Quick announcement, though, that I think will be exciting for a lot of you that are listening this year. SNY will be partnering with the Queens Baseball Convention for its sixth annual gathering of Mets fans. And here's the big news. Shea Anything will be doing a live podcast on location at the QBC. It's at Catch Astoria on January 19th. Tickets will be on sale starting Friday, November 23rd at 10 a.m. For more information, follow SNY on social media. We'll provide you with the latest details. There will be panels. Keith Hernandez will be there with us. Other ex-Mets to be announced soon. And most importantly, us.
Is Keith on the, like, the
I don't know if he's
stuff
doing,
we're doing?
I don't know.
Or does he have his own little Keith
I wouldn't
thing?
Neither would surprise me, but he will be there.
Well, can we drink a beer during the Shea Anything, considering it's this live?
I think maybe, yeah.
I'm gonna do that.
None of it's broadcast, so...
Really?
No, it's just in-house. Well, actually...
We've got to record it and let the rest of the
we'll
people...
Yeah, we'll probably share the Shea Anything podcast, but I'm talking about TV.
I see.
I don't think we can drink on TV. We might be able to have a beer on our podcast, though.
I drink on TV 3 to 4 nights a week.
Anytime you see him with the red coffee cups that they have here on SNY, that is an alcoholic drink, as he's taking a sip right now.
It's not funny. It's a problem.
Okay, so let's start. We're going to get to Brody big picture. Mets fans have had a couple days now to digest their new general manager. But you have some reporting today about who he may surround himself with, as I teased earlier,
well,
in the front office.
Yeah, we're still trying to figure out who he may hire and bring in, specifically who his assistant. He mentioned that he wants multiple assistant GMs, so who those people might be. I don't have those names yet. Nobody does. Those names might not exist yet in terms of who he's actually reached out to or targeted. But as this is not a news flash. Anyone who's been following the Mets for weeks or months would know that Omar Minaya is a major voice in that front office, will continue to be a major voice in that front office. I do not believe that Fred Wilpon would have signed off on the hiring of an outside-the-box candidate if he did not have Omar Minaya in the organization. Because he can look at Minaya and say, this is my player personnel guy, this is my scout, this is my evaluator, right, whatever you want to say. And he is going to be a very close upper end to Van Wagenen associate in that front office. So people also want to know about the rest of that three-headed GM that was running the show for half a season after Alderson left. And my information is that John Rico and J.P. Ricciardi could very much, it's very possible that they will leave the organization. It may not be immediate. They're both under contract, but they have had the option to leave if they want to leave. And people who know both of these guys think that they will leave. I should say that Rico and Ricciardi have not commented, weighed in, or even really shown much interest in engaging in this question, which is something I totally respect. But it's my job to talk to a ton of people, and people who know these guys really well believe that they're on the way out. So we'll see how that plays out. There are a lot of people that hope that John Rico stays because of how respected he is among the people who answer to him, the rank and file that work for the Mets. And there's hope that because he has had a long-term strong relationship with Brody Van Wagenen, and that might convince him to stay. But the thought is it'll probably go.
We talked about this briefly on Baseball Night in New York. I believe it was last night. The mistake that the Mets made, and I'm willing to call it a mistake myself, by not surrounding Mickey Callaway in the dugout last year with an experienced bench coach who knows the ins and outs of in-game mm-hmm. managing. Will they, the Mets, want to learn from that mistake, go into next year by surrounding Brody Van Wagenen with experienced former GMs like an Omar Minaya? Or do they feel like Omar Minaya is enough of a presence in that capacity moving into next year so he can bring in whoever he wants around
him? I would say that Omar Minaya checks that box as a bench coach.
Yeah. Yes.
So GM who brought the team to the NLCS his second year on the job in 2006, who assembled a lot of that 2015 team that Sandy Alderson finished off and took to the to the World Series. So that's your bench coach right there.
So would that, though, his role would be something like a senior advisor, though, right? Not an assistant GM.
Right. His title wouldn't change, it's my understanding. He's currently a senior advisor. Okay. I'm pretty sure that's what they call him. So that's, he would stay that.
A GM can have that kind of bench coach as a senior advisor, not necessarily their assistant GM? Like,
yeah.
Okay, so their assistant GM could end up being someone who's inexperienced, someone like a level below Chaim Bloom, maybe. Who's
Certainly.
Like, so yeah. They want to hire someone smart to be his...
You couldn't convince someone to take an assistant GM job, probably, who isn't up and coming. Because...
Right, okay.
And in fact, when Alderson brought in his... You can call, and we've talked about on this thing with right. show with titles before, you can call anybody anything you want, and some of that has to do with pay, some of that has to do with getting permission to interview them. Sandy Alderson wanted his right-hand men to be Paul DePodesta and J.P. Ricciardi when he took the job at the end of 2010. Ricciardi had been fired from the Blue Jays, had just started working at ESPN, so that wasn't a tricky thing, and he came in, I think he was the director of pro scouting, but he had this more nebulous responsibility is like Sandy's evaluation guy, just a guy that Sandy listened to. And DePodesta was hired away from the San Diego Padres. What was his title at the time? I don't remember what his initial title was. And assistant GM may have been part of it. The point is, it doesn't really matter. Those are his guys.
Okay.
Omar Minaya is going to be one of Brody's guys, but of course, he's a Wilpon guy. He didn't come in with Van Wagenen. So Brody, I assume, as any GM would want to do, is going to identify friends of his in the game and bring them in. But you wouldn't get a Chaim Bloom. Chaim Bloom's going to say,
right,
I'll go somewhere where I can run a team.
I'm just trying to make the distinction that any Met fan who's waiting for them to hire an assistant GM, it may not be...
Oh, it's not like some big thing.
Right.
Yeah.
It may not be that experienced bench coach guy. That may come in the advisory role and not necessarily the official yeah. title of being an assistant
right.
GM.
Right. It just has to do with pay, status.
Right.
Omar Minaya would never agree to be an assistant GM. Why?
He wants the flexibility and probably the...
And he was a GM.
Right.
So you wouldn't agree to be a backup anchor, you
right,
know?
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
And, you know, until things...
spiral out of control
yeah,
in my career.
Someday you'll beg for it.
Right.
But as of right now.
Of course. So let's get to our impressions generally, Andy, of Brody Van Wagenen. I thought, just to give in mind, first, I don't know if you were surprised by the same thing. It was a very short press conference.
I was surprised
and
by that.
And then he kind of did all the media rounds. After that, lots of one-on-one interviews with various personalities in the New York media.
Boy, how much of a jerk is Mike Francesa? What a bad person. What an awful interview that was.
Well, that was an interesting interview. But Brody, he was asked a variety of questions in this press conference, one of which was from Bruce Beck, who asked him specifically about the Jacob deGrom situation, the comments that he had made earlier on in the season, middle of last year at the All-Star break, when he said basically you can trade or sign Jacob deGrom. Like, you got to do one of two. Let's actually play that, Jeff, who's in the control room right now. Let's play what Brody had to say about deGrom.
So Jacob deGrom clearly has established himself as the best pitcher in baseball. You want to try to identify the best players, and you want to keep them for as long as possible. And if our vision and direction does not intend to include a long, sustainable winning team, then you have to consider moving players. But make no mistake, I believe Jacob deGrom is an incredible talent, and I hope to keep him for a long time.
So generally speaking, Andy, how do you think he came off? Was that the most important thing that he had to address to you that day?
Was it the most important thing? That's an interesting question. No, his most important thing to me, the most important thing would have been his vision for the team going forward, which we didn't really get other than in generalities.
Yes.
The DeGrom situation is a short-term issue, of course, for someone who hopes to be the GM of this team after Jacob deGrom is retired, but it's the most pressing short-term issue, obviously. He's the most important player. His take on this is my position on DeGrom and the Mets doesn't have to change because, and I've talked to him about this on the side in addition to what he said publicly, because he would say and has said, my position on DeGrom in July was that he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. He deserves to either be paid fair value or go somewhere where he'd be part of the plans there. And I think he still feels that way. He just, now that he's a GM of the Mets, he wants that place to be the Mets
right.
more so. And he would also say that, Well, he did say that good players deserve to be rewarded financially, and that's what creates a good culture. And that's similar to what he said before. Another thing, a point that he's made at some point during all these media rounds, was that the outlook for the Mets in some way has changed since he made those comments. And I think I know what he means in that he said those things, and DeGrom wanted him to say those things in July in response to specifically John Ricco saying to the media, we might be open to trading DeGrom to do a rebuild. So DeGrom felt...
We're going to think outside the box.
Yeah, and DeGrom felt that if John Ricco got to talk, so do I.
Right.
So that was literally what happened there, is that DeGrom wanted to have a voice because the Mets front office had a voice. And at that point, it was like, well, if we're doing a rebuild, I want to go somewhere else to get paid and win. And he wanted them to get good players. So now that they're not doing a rebuild, Van Wagenen would say, well, the Mets are no longer considering rebuilding, so of course DeGrom should be a part of this.
Right. It's an interesting point that you make, and I think all of this ties together. I want to also play Brody's mission statement because it's a fascinating point. The second half of last year's season, from when Brody made that statement as Jacob DeGrom's agent to the end of the season, optimism in terms of the Mets and their outlook for 2019 just kept going up, because they kept playing better and better baseball. And Jacob DeGrom obviously pitched so ridiculously well for the whole year. That changed the vibe of the entire 2018 baseball season for the Mets and their fans. And Brody would not be giving the mission statement I'm about to play for you if he didn't feel like this team showed glimpses of hope at the end of last season. Take a listen.
I want to leave you with one simple but important mission statement that I have. We will win now. As Jeff said, we will win in the future. We're going to develop a winning culture and a winning mindset. And we will deliver this city and this fan base a team they can be proud of.
I mean, it's an interesting... I mean, look, big picture. The first point you just made when I asked you the question about Brody was that we didn't hear a lot of specifics. It was mostly generalities. Is that... Who's to blame for that? I'm not saying that our fellow journalists or the people in that room, the writers who were asking the questions, did anything wrong by not saying, hey, Brody, like, are you going to tender Travis d'Arnaud a contract? Or, like, what's the plan at first base? Are these things normally like that? Like, the mission statement that they're a win now is the most specific thing that we got out of him necessarily moving forward.
Which, by the way, is not nothing, because as we just discussed, they were considering going into a rebuild a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And it's more normal for a GM to take over like Sandy Alderson and indicate that, without using the word rebuild, they say things like, well, we're going to compete now and you know, we'll make the World Series in 5 years kind of thing. So his Van Wagenen's mandate is very different than the standard new GM mandate, where it's like, win next year. They usually give themselves a couple years of leeway. So that was something. But in terms of how he expects to do it, we didn't get much in that. I'll say this. You know, the Mets, there was that weird applause, which isn't normal for a press conference. Normally, it's the media, and they're not applauding, as they obviously would be inappropriate. That applause was the Mets employees that were brought in, staffers, baseball ops people.
They're in the
people.
Foxwoods Club, which is bigger than the press conference room.
So I talked to a lot of people, or a number of people who were part of that group, who felt genuinely fired up by his message. They liked what he projected. They liked the confidence. And no one who works for Van Wagenen that I talked to complained about the lack of specifics. So he definitely accomplished motivating his new staff. And that's an important piece of it. In terms of answering questions to the public, to the media, and by virtue of through the media, of course, to the public, that's got to come soon. It didn't come that day. I'm going to be very interested to spend a couple days with him and a much smaller group of reporters at the GM meetings in California next week, because then it will be, okay, are you interested in Real Muto? Or whatever. You thinking about extending Wheeler, or you're going to just let him play out his walk here? And these kinds of specific things. To have a vision or a mission statement about how we're going to win now is great, but obvious, and you talked about culture a lot too, and having a positive culture. Well, any positive culture lives or dies on the details.
Yep.
And now we just have to find. I'm not saying it was a problem that we didn't get any details yet. I'm just saying, as I think you are, that we're still waiting on those details and we're interested in them.
Steve Gelbs asked a really good question in the one-on-one interview after the press conference, which was basically, what do you think of Mickey Callaway? Is he going to be your manager?
And he's a very positive person.
Yeah, Brody did not give him a ringing endorsement. And obviously, it's not that Mickey Callaway has necessarily done anything to get a ringing endorsement from Brody Van Wagenen, but he did say Mickey's a very positive person, which there are a lot of things you can say about a manager.
It's like, as a manager, he's an awfully nice guy.
Right. So I thought that was interesting, something to watch moving forward. I mean, I don't necessarily think there's any chance you would be able to tell me for sure that we go into next year and suddenly Mickey Callaway is not the manager.
He's definitely the manager.
So there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
And I was shocked when, frankly, when that seemed like anyone was surprised, like, oh, he just said Callaway is going to be the manager. It's like, yeah, all the managers are hired, you know, for this offseason. Brad Ausmus went to the Angels and et cetera. Like, it's over. Manager season is over.
So if Mickey Callaway was 6 years into his job and they
bring
had struggled, you think that no matter what his contractual situation or like...
Oh, well, any manager under contract is going to start the next season with a new GM. The GM, a new GM, he already... Brody,
unless you fire a GM and a manager at the same time, obviously.
Of course. So, Alderson, which was the case last time, and Alderson hired Terry Collins as his first big move. Obviously, though, they didn't have a manager under contract. Jerry Manuel was gone.
Right.
A new GM would be crazy to fire any manager, no matter how bad they were, when they came in. Brody already put more pressure, as we just discussed, on himself than usual by saying, we're supposed to win next year. That's pretty rare.
Right.
And now he's going to hang himself on the line by choosing his own manager? I'm sure he would have no interest in doing
that. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way. It's an added piece of pressure on top of what already is a lot of pressure.
He has a lot of work to do.
Wagging his shoulders. Yeah.
Let's let the guy who's already here write the lineup card until you got your feet under you, and then you figure out what you want to do with that job.
Can I hypothetically paint a picture just quickly?
You can.
I am not, this is not a hot take, and a lot of times you hear the conflict of interest stuff with Van Wagenen, and that's supposed to be this super negative thing, and it's going to end up being his undoing as general manager. Why would they hire somebody who can't negotiate with our best player? I'm not saying it's going to be a problem. I'm saying it's weird.
Yeah, so, I think we should dig into this.
I'm your agent, okay? And you're renegotiating your next deal with SNY for what I imagine to be about $40 million annually, I would guess, for you.
Ballpark.
Your services. So you and I talk, and I'm like, Andy, so what do you want me to go and ask them for? And you're like, $40 million. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to ask for $45. Hopefully we get down to $40. Fast forward to now, I am in control on the other side of the table with your negotiation. Mm-hmm. And you say, hey, Doug, I know you used to be my agent. Now you're my boss and you're negotiating this deal. I want $45 million. I'm going to say, I know that Andy just wants $40. Mm-hmm. This is a negotiating tactic we discussed before I took this job.
Yeah.
So won't that be weird? Won't Brody be totally prepared for everything that Jacob deGrom and his new agent, whoever it ends up being, come to the table with in that negotiation?
Pretty much. Yeah, it is weird. And it's a legitimate topic that should be discussed. My original take on this was like, and I still believe this, is that the NBA, obviously, and Arne Tellem and Bob Myers and Golden State have had situations like this with agents. Major League Baseball organization's different. It's a different job. And I don't know of anyone who's had this many clients on the current team that they took over. So it's definitely weird. The best way I could summarize it is this. I think it says something about the way that the game has changed over a few decades, because there are agents like Scott Boras and other guys who I've talked to off the record lately who are older agents who see management and labor as enemies, and how like that's like crossing a picket line. Like how dare you? You've been an advocate for the working man. Now how could you possibly go over and work for the enemy? That is one old school way to think about it. I think that in more now, Boris about 60 to 65, maybe like 65. Van Wagenen's 44. In the past couple of decades, everyone has gotten so filthy rich in this game that I think they've started to drift towards seeing themselves as a little bit more under the same umbrella. So I think it's a bit of a generational thing as to how big of a deal this is in the game, in the history of labor in the game. Now it's getting a little bit bumpier, that relationship again. But in the 80s with collusion and all this kind of stuff, it was a war. So you would never think to cross over. So I think that's part of it. I think also Van Wagenen is someone who he's ambitious. He wants to make a mark in the game. And an opportunity that he didn't foresee came along. Now, if you're Jacob deGrom or any of his other clients, though, you're well within your rights to be weirded out by it. Absolutely. And I know that Brody did a lot of work with his client list
right.
over the weekend before he started the Mets job.
I'm sure, yeah.
And we haven't heard anything negative about him from any of those clients yet. That doesn't mean we won't about him, about this move. I wouldn't assume that they're all cool with it, and I wouldn't assume that anyone has a problem with it. It'll be interesting as, like, DeGrom will next speak probably when he wins the Cy Young Award. I assume there'll be a chance for someone to ask him about it. But, yeah, it's thorny. I also think one last point about this. Baseball is a morally corrupt environment in so many ways. Teams are accused of engaging in human trafficking. Agents are engaging in drug trafficking. So a business conflict of interest is far down the list of problem. And I'm not just being inflammatory. That's part of this, is that people are like, yeah, well, I mean, okay, it's not great, but Jesus, baseball is so bad that, you know, whatever. That is part of, I'm sorry, but that's part of this.
No, I think that's an interesting point to make. But for now, we're talking about this specifically. Like, I know that there are bigger problems in baseball right now, but specifically
it's a bit of a moral cop-out,
with this hire of Brody Van Wagenen. This is the reason that it was not the easiest hire for them to make from a PR standpoint. They could have hired a variety of people who would have made less headlines than hiring someone who not only has not done this job before, but has done the job on the other side of the table. And quickly, before we get more into this, I want to play Mets COO Jeff Wilpon's comments just about the conflict of interest and what he's done in terms of his contract with Brody Van Wagenen specifically going into this.
I had conversations with the commissioner's office, LRD, and Tony Clark directly, and we have provisions in Brody's contract to deal with any conflicts of interest.
One more direction I want to go with Brody, and we've talked about this on Baseball Night in New York, maybe not as much on Shea Anything. Brody, between the DeGrom statement, between the statement about the offseason last year, we have heard his name a lot. Obviously, co-head of baseball at CAA.
Yeah.
That's a big job in the business. Mm-hmm. But for us to know his name even before his name came into this GM search is different. Other than Scott Boras and Casey Close, maybe,
mm-hmm.
you don't. Not a lot of casual fans know the name of these players' agents off the top of their head.
It's true.
How do you think Brody, forget about conflict of interest, all that. How do you think Brody goes into negotiating contracts in an offseason coming after the one where he accused teams of having collusion last year? I mean, he's got to have a specific outlook on the way this will go, knowing how he saw it go last offseason.
Good question. I think there's a lot to unpack there, probably. And these are a lot of the conversations I've been having with people around the game. On the player side, on the union side, on the executive side, the agent side, over the past couple of weeks, as this has gained some traction, where to start here? He will have a challenge in relating to GMs in the sense that the GMs is a club, its own club, and they kind of take care of each other in a lot of cases. And there's sort of an honor among thieves mentality among rival GMs, and that they try to rip each other off, but within certain boundaries because they're all. There's only 30 of them, and they're all buddies, but a lot of them are buddies. A lot of them go drink together at the winter meetings. It's a club. And the agent is the enemy of that club. The agent's the slimy guy that they hate that's trying to get them to pay more and all that. So that's a challenge, dynamic-wise. Now, I truly will tell you that Brody Van Wagenen, unlike Scott Boras, has a good reputation among the people that he's dealt with. He's liked. Both on the union side, he's liked. And players and other agents like him okay. Other agents are really pretty... agents are vicious with each other. They're all enemies with each other. Mm-hmm. So actually, that's another challenge. He's actually got a deal with Scott Boras on a Michael Conforto now when they're, like, sworn enemies in public. So that's one thing. That's a challenge. But dealing with GMs, I've spoken with GMs who really like him, who think it's a good hire for the Mets, and just think that among the agents... who we all hate. We hate all of them, but Brody's all right in that group. That's how they feel.
Do you think he will have trouble negotiating with Boras clients?
They're going to have to be professional because everyone needs to do their job and get paid. But I think agents will be... agents are always trying to screw each other, steal each other's clients, trash each other off the record in the media. that is where it's really toxic, is agent on agent in baseball. So that, and now he's going
to
deal with agents.
So now agents are just supposed to treat him because he has a different job like any other GM?
Yeah, in theory.
You think they'll do that?
Not to a man, no. Just, yeah, they're human beings.
Yeah, you know, But then again,
he's good friends with some of these guys at CAA baseball who have so many Mets, and that helps. So this
true.
Is complicated stuff.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What I've learned from just having this conversation we've been having for like 25 minutes, mm-hmm. that the conflict of interest stuff with Jacob deGrom may be the most headline-worthy issue and problem that this hire presents. But there are a lot of complications. I'm not sure they will turn into problems.
Yeah.
Like, the things we're talking about...
They're questions.
Yeah, they're mm-hmm. questions. But who knows if the first time that Brody Van Wagenen calls Scott Boras, like, who's Manny Machado's agent?
Dan Lozano.
Okay. So if Dan Lozano...
He's the guy that was
like,
in Deadspin for, like, getting prostitutes for his clients and everything. Look him up. This is quite a world, agents.
He looks at Brody Van Wagenen as a cop-out, a guy who was an agent, doesn't deserve to have the job, doesn't deserve to be the guy on the other line for this phone call. That's an issue because that gets in the way of just team calling player. That's all it should be.
Yeah, well, that's another way that John Rico is really valuable, by the way.
Yeah.
John Rico did much of the agent legwork in the Sandy Alderson regime. He had GM responsibilities for a long time, John Rico. And he was the guy. He has a relationship with Boras that's good. He had a relationship with Van Wagenen and CAA that was good. So they really should try to hold on to John Rico.
What do you think of the people? I'm just going to... I don't have the specific tweets in front of me, but when you tweeted today that John Rico, the Mets, a lot of people in the Mets organization, I'm paraphrasing, would hate to lose John Rico just because of how well he's viewed both with the Mets and in the game. And how people in front offices, on-field personnel, everybody respects him. What's your response to the fan response, which is, why hold on to something, this big piece that you're saying mm-hmm. was at the forefront of the Mets front office in years that they're trying to move forward from?
Because he has good skills and respect. I don't know how to... I don't know how to engage that point. He's not responsible for their record. He has skills that go into running a baseball team, and he does them well.
My opinion on that
blame
point...
Blame Sandy Alderson for the record, if you want to blame someone.
My opinion on that point is it's an easy one to answer on your part by just saying, well, John Rico's not responsible
for
the years that they're trying to move past. He has some skills that the Mets would love to have. But at the same time, you're saying that John Rico was GM for a long time, was a high-profile member of their front office. So
any
Mets fan
World
could
Series.
Hear that and be like, look, so why aren't we bringing everybody back? So I understand both sides of
it. Well, I think Sandy Alderson would be a terrific GM in 2019, but he got sick and left, and that era ended. So, you could have a whole other discussion about that. I don't subscribe to the theory that you throw the baby out with the bathwater, and I just know that John Rico is really good at what he does. And furthermore, he's a person of integrity and character and a game of a lot of sleaze, and I think that that's an important thing to hold on to.
Yeah, and just going off of the conversation we've had, it would be good to have someone in the game who's well-respected in that front office.
So that it's
not just Brody Van Wagenen calling.
Right.
That other teams who may be skeptical about this hire know that John Rico and Omar Minaya, guys who are so respected in the game, stood by this organization and this GM mm-hmm. when this was announced, when this hire was made.
Yeah.
I think that's a very fair point to make.
I just think that describing a team's record to any individual, even the GM, is oversimplified, obviously, but certainly not a John Rico who does a lot of rules stuff. He does a lot of contracts. He does a lot of dealing with agents, a lot of negotiating, a lot of calling and talking to other GMs. It's a lot of the nitty-gritty, detail-oriented work, and he's good at it. He's the most hardworking person in that building, possibly, and he's well-respected, so I don't understand an objection to that, frankly. He's got a decision to make because he's wanted, and he's got to decide which way he wants to take his career.
Okay, so moving forward, I know we've been a little inconsistent with our episodes since the offseason started. Obviously, we will continue to do them as the offseason moves forward. Next week, you're at the GM meetings, correct? So we're going to try and figure out a way to loop Andy into the podcast. Maybe we haven't asked him yet, have Adam Fisher back on the show. Obviously, Adam has experience being at those meetings and working with teams and players and reps and agents and all that stuff. So we'd love to have his insight. So if he listens to this before we get a chance to ask him, Adam, we'd
Adam
love to
have
you on the show.
Adam was basically the interim GM of the Braves just 12 months ago at the GM meetings representing the Atlanta Braves.
Have good insight for next week's episode. Saturday night. My Saturday night itself was actually kind of boring, but that's because my Saturday day was very exciting. I went to a vineyard in Malibu.
So you were probably kind of tired by the night.
I was tired. I was like, I had the sun on me all day. You know that feeling. Like, and, you know, a couple glasses of wine, of course. But it was good. I have a bunch of friends in L.A. that I don't get to see enough, obviously. And it was really nice to see them. It was a really fun day. And it's a beautiful part of the country.
The wine tasting, as much fun as it is mid-afternoon, it's pretty much that bad at like 8 p.m. You're like, I'm gonna headache.
And yeah, you're dehydrated. And I don't know.
I had a very Halloween-y Saturday night. Oh my gosh, where did it begin? We had a Halloween party for my son in the basement. My wife and my son did such an amazing job of turning our basement into a haunted house. This was at like 3 p.m. we started this. I had 17 children ages like 4 to 7 in my basement. And I was like the teacher for 3 hours.
I'm glad that they were invited.
I was running games. And this apple game where they had to put their hands behind their back and bite an apple that was hanging from a string. And some of them got really frustrated. I told them scary stories. We did Halloween stuff. So that was fun. And then that ended. And we went to this amazing Halloween party where there was this live salsa band with horns and there's this catering of this great Mexican food, and it was really fun. And my wife and I partied the night away at this party. Better than yours.
I just have a lot of reactions to what you just said. First of all,
share one or two, and then we'll get going.
Anybody could clip off that you just had. You said you had like 17 4 to 7-year-old children in your basement.
Use that against
me. Clip that off. Use it against Andy. You have my permission. Secondly,
capturing the
freedom. All collectively sounded like a dream. You're like,
really?
there's horns. Sometimes you have these experiences in this town.
I like to live life.
Go unnamed that you live in that I don't hear other people doing things that you do.
I will tell you something else that might sound dreamlike. My friend who had the party designs genre book covers for a living as a freelancer. He makes like romance book covers, like horror, like all these. He does that, and he's a freelancer. And it was his bookkeeper, who's like a 50-some-year-old woman who does bookkeeping for his freelance book cover designing business, who is the bass player for the salsa band. It's true. It's all true.
Oh, what to say. Okay, let's wrap it at that. Look at the time.
This is
the Shay Anything Podcast. Please subscribe. Give us a rate and review if you enjoy it. We'd really appreciate it. It helps us out. Hopefully, we'll talk to you next week from the GM meetings. Andy will be in
Carlsbad, California.
Nice. All right. We'll talk to you then. Thanks for listening.